My name is Michael Niven, and I am interviewing Chuck Jackson, better known as CJ Styles. And he has graciously invited me into his home at 9601 Brockton. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
That's good. The first question I have for you is, at what age did your love for music begin?
I have to say probably about 9 years old. Listening to music on the radio, that sort of TV. Okay.
Any particular music in particular that came? Like anything that grabbed your attention?
Yeah, well, at that time, radio was just AM, so whatever you can listen to probably be a lot of different rock groups, country western. Mm-hmm. There's only a couple of radio stations back then.
Okay, yeah. I grew up in the FM age.
It was AM radio.
Okay.
Basically, I think the radio station was CKLW. I used to listen to out of Canada.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what were your first loves of music?
Back to listening to the radio and
like anybody that popped up on the radio that you thought, oh wow, you know.
Well, Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Yeah. That and looking at TV, you know, seeing groups perform.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of acts I see, you know, you try to emulate them, copy their songs or so.
Okay. You know,
a lot of Motown groups.
Okay. When did you begin playing music?
Probably about the age of 12, I got a guitar for Christmas. A friend of mine said he got a guitar, so he told me to get one. I didn't know how to play, but I got that guitar probably around age of 12, 13.
I know nowadays, like, you can get tablature and stuff online and stuff like that. But, were you guys trying to emulate what you were hearing, or?
Yeah. Well, like I say, at that time, they was playing a lot of Motown songs, like My Girl or something, or some Jimi Hendrix songs, or, you know. So we try to pick them songs out and play them around the neighborhood, in the backyard, on the guitar.
Okay. What instruments have you tried?
Well, let's see. I started with the guitar. I went from guitar, tried bass, another drums. I played cello in college for a little bit, and piano.
Okay.
Did piano in high school, you know, classes like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you say, like, bass is what you fell in love with, or that just?
Yes. Because everybody in the neighborhood had a guitar, and didn't nobody have no bass.
Yeah.
I was the only bass player. It was easy. So it'd be 10 guitars and one bass player.
Okay. Did you know then that music was what you were destined for?
Not really, but sort of. I had two loves, that and basketball.
Okay.
You know, so I was doing a lot of basketball. Playing basketball in school and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I still was doing a little music, you know, in school too. So I went with the music.
Mm-hmm. It was the one that called you.
Yeah. I thought for the music, yeah. I didn't know I was going to be playing music all my life, but I'm there now.
You probably thought, like, when you were younger, it's like, oh, this is just something, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, just having fun.
Yeah, eventually you'll get that real job, you know, that everyone tell all the parents tell you, you know.
Oh, yeah. Even when I got married, my wife, my mother said, how are you going to take care of you doing music? And I've been married now over 35 years.
Yeah.
Started at a young age and still playing.
Yeah, that's great, man. What was the music industry like in Detroit when you began? Can you kind of contrast that from then and now?
Yeah, well, it was a heavy dose of Motown, of course. Mm-hmm. Since Motown was here, everybody wanted to try to emulate groups from Motown or play with you know, behind different groups mm-hmm. in Motown. So Motown was the biggest thing out there. Like I said, they're still the biggest in the world, you know.
Yeah.
Groups so emulated they songs from the UK everywhere, you know. So that was basically the Motown sound. And then the radio, you know, there's a lot of music on the radio, so you hear all the other yeah. groups, you know, acts like Elton John or whoever. Detroit, Motown, that was basically it. Singing groups. Matter of fact, before I even started playing the bass, I was walking around in the singing group, but we weren't singing that. Mm-hmm. We was pantomiming, do a bunch of Temptation songs. Mm-hmm. Go get us some talent shows. You know?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of, that's what it was. A lot of people just wanted to love music, go out there and sing. And plus, my brother used to sing in a group as well.
Oh.
So I used to sit around at rehearsals. Pick up stuff.
Okay. And like today, what do you like? You view it as a different monster today?
Oh, yeah. The whole game has changed a lot, you know, simply because back then, anybody, they would play your record on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, they only play, you know, selected artists instead of letting everybody music. It was so many groups could get their music on the radio.
Yeah.
You can hear all different acts. Now it's limited to a certain, you know, it has changed.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of good music still out there that people probably never get a chance to hear, you know.
Yeah.
And the record deals is different now. They used to give you money, you know, to sign up with them. Now it's hard to for an act to get signed up to a major label.
Yeah, it's kind of like the internet's kind of taking over the radio
in terms yes, of it had. Freedom. Yes, because I also had a record shop.
Yeah.
And record stores were still around at the time. Yeah. And so when they started selling bootleg, on you know, you can download all the music, it knocked everybody out the box.
Yeah.
And the difference is now, like you said, you can go and buy the song off the internet. No longer, you know, no mom and pop mm-hmm. record shops.
Yeah. So. How and when did the Soul Sonics come into being?
That started when I met this drummer named Otis when I moved to a different neighborhood. And me and him started the band, mm-hmm. the Soulful Sonics. And then the guitar player, we got a guitar player. We just tossed some names. We talked around about 3 or 4 names. And then came up with the Soulful Sonics. And our first band. It was a 3-piece.
Okay. So you were on bass?
Yes.
Okay.
And Otis Woods was on drums. And Henry Taylor was on guitar.
Okay.
So we was in our teens then when that started. And then we added a keyboard player. Roger Brewer, then we tossed some names around and came up with Soulful Sonics.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure that's how a lot of bands are doing.
Yeah, they toss some names around.
Mm-hmm. Who was the vocalist, or was there no one?
At that time, there was no vocalist.
Okay.
When we put that band together.
Okay.
Wasn't nobody singing or nothing. We just played okay. copy. People saw.
Mm-hmm. Was this around the time the name CJ Styles was adapted?
No, nowhere around. CJ Styles was nowhere around that time.
Okay.
You're talking about over 30 years after that.
Oh, okay.
The band had disbanded. Pure Pleasure. Afterward, yeah.
Oh, okay. When did the Soul Sonics become Pure Pleasure? And why did that name change take place?
Because we added some more members to the group and we felt we should change the name called Soulful Sonics. Sounded kind of corny mm-hmm. after a while. So we We had a singer because we was just a rhythm band. We had a couple of singers. We changed the name then to Pure Pleasure.
Okay.
Because we had it. Let's see, we had it. Tony Davis. Then we added Aaron McCarthy, and then Aaron left, and we added Barbara Love to the Pure Pleasure. That's how we came up with the By My Side when we put her in the group.
Okay. I read that you went back to Henry Ford Community in college. What was your inspiration for heading back to college?
Oh, to get a degree, you know, in music, in the entertainment field.
Was it like to grasp a greater concept of music, or did you want to teach it perhaps?
No, I went there to learn music.
Okay.
You know, I was majoring in music and entertainment.
Okay.
At that time, yeah, that's why I went to Henry Ford. You know, I was in a concert band, you know, stuff like that, learning other instruments and learning how to read music.
Okay. Speaking of, as we talked before about By My Side, what event or memory inspired it to come into creation?
Actually, the guitar player, Henry Taylor, he started off playing some guitar on it. And then, you know, we all just collaborated and came together and put it together. And then the singer Barbara came up with some lyrics. That's how it came together. So I produced it, and then I arranged the arrangements on it, and arranged the vocals and everything on it. That's how it came together. So we recorded that song, and we recorded enough for an album when we did that song. But we never did complete the full album.
Okay. Like when you're mixing it, I know today it's like everything's digitalized now. It's like even part of this interview, I'm going to edit it through a digital program. What was the instruments that you used then? Was it just like tape wise? Just
yep. It was all reel to reel.
Okay.
And that came about a friend of mine I went to Henry Ford with, Paul Jinger, white guy, very good friend of mine, and then he played the trumpet, and John Garrett, the trombone player, he arranged the horns on By My Side.
Yeah.
And so that's how, you know, we got all that music together. And we recorded in Indianapolis. We didn't even record it here in Detroit.
Oh, okay.
And that's how that came about. And we got that big sound out of it with the rhythm section. Because the horn players used to come here when they were going to college or the college break. And they'd come down and jam with us around the city. But I met them guys when I was going to college.
Okay. What was your reaction to hearing it the first time on the radio?
Oh, that was like, wow, we're on the radio. It was great. And the funny part was it, since we produced it, arranged it, distributed, we did the whole nine yards. We did all of it ourselves. So we went and picked a box up at the airport. When they shipped him here, left the airport, went straight to WGPR radio. They used to be on Jefferson, and there's a guy named Mojo, and he told us beforehand, if you get your record, I promise I'll play it. So we got the record, we left the airport, went straight to the radio station, gave him one. We got in our car and started heading down Jefferson, and bam, the record came on. So he kept his word, and that's the first time we had heard it.
Yeah.
And it was great. Like, oh man, we're on the radio. So, and you know, that was really exciting. Then after that, we got it all on all the other radio stations.
Yeah.
You know, we got it promoted ourselves all the way to Ohio, all the way to Florida. We did this all ourselves. You know.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it was. That was crazy, though. I expected to hear it that soon, you know, and we didn't know whether they gonna play it on the radio or not. Yeah. After that, it just snowballed.
While touring with Pure Pleasure, was there any fond memories that or stories you'd like to share?
Yeah, it was some good ones. There's some crazy ones too. You know, there's a lot. Yeah, we did a lot. We enjoyed doing a lot of opening up for big acts. You know, we always like the group for the main act. Mm-hmm. You know, we enjoyed that a lot because, you know, you got it's like a concert type of crowd. That, you know, that was great. And then all of us living in the same house in Florida, when we left Detroit, right out of school, we went to Florida. And then we started touring, doing dates down in Florida, different places, you know, Boca Raton, Hollywood, Florida, all over, you know, promoting the record. So that was fun. And, you know, it was an experience, you know. We had to cook our own food. We all in the same house. Get up, practice 9 in the morning every day to make the group tight. That was our job. So that was a lot of fun, you know, meeting the people.
Mm-hmm. Any region that like accepted you guys better than other region, like Florida? You talk about going to Florida a lot. Was that region more accepting of your song?
Yeah,
more so than let's say Detroit, or was it neutral then?
It was pretty neutral. Where every place we went, because the group was so tight by that time. You know, it was. Everybody accepted whatever we did, you know.
So okay,
we had no problem with everybody loved the group. Whatever we did, you know.
Okay,
we had a fantastic show. It was tight, so it wasn't a song we couldn't do.
What caused Pure Pleasure to disband in the '80s?
Okay, that came upon the keyboard player Roger Brewer. Me and him were the main leaders of the band. He decided to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he left, the band decided, you know, everybody disbanded and stopped except me. So
okay.
I kept the band going. I kept Pure Pleasure alive. And I'm the only one that's still doing Pure Pleasure. So, when he left the group, you know, everybody went their own way.
Okay.
You know, he went to pursue something else, try to do something different. And since I started the group, I couldn't leave my own group.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had offers to join a lot of different other people, you know.
Okay, yeah.
You know, groups and stuff, but I just stuck with my group.
Okay. After they disbanded, I read that you joined Destination Love. What was the experience like that differed from Pure Pleasure?
Well, Destination Love was a girls group that then Joyce Johnson and Phyllis Johnson, they stayed one block behind me.
Okay.
You know, so I joined that group for about 4 or 5 years. Yeah. It was great because we used to play behind that group when we was kids because we all grew up together.
Mm-hmm.
So Destination Love was the band for them. Pure Pleasure was the band for Destination Love.
Okay.
You know. So we would play behind them all the time, you know. So when they opened up for the Blue Notes or Destination Love changed, it was three females. Joyce, she kept the group going. She was her and the sister. It was her and the sister and their cousin. It's Joyce the only one that kept going. Phyllis got married and stopped singing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that Destination Love, she kept that group going. And that's how I ended up joining that group after Pure Pleasure.
Okay.
Because after Pure Pleasure disbanded, she was still singing. So I was just, they needed a bass player.
Yeah. So it's similar music, similar...
Well, that group was doing everything. It didn't make no difference.
Okay. So,
you know,
they would play rock and roll and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we was doing everything. Pat Benatar, rock and roll type stuff. Fleetwood Mac and whatever, and whatever song was out, you know. Frank Sinatra, it didn't make no difference. Michael Jackson. Because we was actually doing a hotel circuit.
Okay.
You know, all the hotels, you know, Northfield, the Hilton, Holiday Inns, all the hotels. We were just tour around doing that.
Okay. Looking back at this experience of backing for acts like the Temptations, the Planeters, the Jones Girls, etc., what was that experience like?
It was great, because my first gig when I started backing them up, and this is recently, was the Platters in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a guy asked me, a friend of mine, say, you want to play, you know, some behind some of these acts? And I said, cool. So, yeah, and that was fun. So, that first, I did Japan with the Platters. Then after that, came back home, started playing behind all these other groups, Motown groups, you know, a couple of the Temptations, you know, the Jones Girls, and the Vandellas, the Miracles. So, I played behind all those groups. I still play behind them right now, too, as well. Yeah, that's great.
I mean, it might be hard to choose, but if you had to choose one, who would be your favorite back?
Oh, the group to back up?
Yeah.
It would be the Contours.
Okay.
Because sometimes when you play behind big acts, you know, they kind of act like they're everything when everybody's just people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know. And the Contours, they're great guys. They're more down to earth, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I just went to the leader of the Contours, the original member, Joe Miller, his name. His 80th birthday was just last week.
Okay.
And we played for his party.
Where was it at?
Yeah, it was here. Matter of fact, it was right off of my alley in the forest, at a banquet hall.
Okay.
Yeah. And, it was cool. There's a lot of different entertainers there and stuff like that. All kind of people. You know, singers. They came from Motown. So that was real nice.
Tell me about performing outside the U.S., How do they receive Detroit music?
They receive Detroit music better than Detroit people.
Oh, really?
Yes. They love, it's just like, they accept us, our music better than here. They love it, yeah. They love music over here in the USA. I don't care where you go. Even though they can't speak on the music, they know what the songs and they know all the words to them. They're like in Japan, they know all the songs, you know. In Europe, they know all the songs. They know everybody that's in the groups of all the songs that come out. They know every member name, you know. That's how well they know their music. And I just did a thing 2 weeks ago. And about 800 people came from the UK. We was at Burt's Warehouse, downtown, Eastern Market. You familiar with that?
Yeah, Eastern Market, yeah.
So, Burt's is right across the street from Eastern Market. So, a couple of weeks ago, they had 800 people from the UK to come hear all these Detroit acts that got records over there. So, they all flew over here. Just for that week, for 1 week.
Yeah.
And every artist that was on there, all the people stood on the floor in front of the stage while everybody performed their song. You're talking about the Contours, Carl Carlton, the Velvets, all these people. Kim Weston from Motown. All these artists have songs over there that's big. They all came over here to see the show.
Why do you think, like, outside they receive it better than us here?
probably because they appreciate the music more. You know, they appreciate the music more. That's all I can say.
It's like we have kind of like a, we take things for advantage.
You know, yes, like yes. We take a lot for granted. Like, say, the music, you know, they just love it. Because I think the music is universal anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I think music is the only thing saving the world right now. Because you can always gravitate to the music.
Yeah.
And it keeps your mind off of other stuff. So they love all the music here. You know, I don't care who it is,
mm-hmm.
Kenny Rogers or whoever, they love all the music here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and Motown actually broke the barrier for a lot of that. You know.
What place do you think the Raven has had in Detroit's music history?
Oh, it had a lot. It has had a lot of impact because the artists, certain artists that went through there, mm-hmm. that was well known. Bunch of top blues artists went through there. So, you know, it's been around a long time. So, mm-hmm. they was right in the middle of the things, like Motown, Rosé Bar. That and the 20 grand, you get all the entertainers, you know, going through there. Performing, you know, you can get entertainment cheap back then too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah. The impact at the Raven was right in the middle of, you know, all these artists performing, you know, around the city, metropolitan area.
Yeah, I was actually surprised when I learned a lot about the Raven, and I'm like, I never heard of it. And I've lived in Detroit, I've lived in Metro Detroit my whole life, you know, and I just found that shocking that this place I've never heard of. You know, why do you think that is, that a lot of people outside of Detroit haven't really?
That was because around the time the Raven was booming, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was all the Chrysler plants. Okay. So it was like a place to go for, you know, all the workers, you know, get off of work, Pole Town and all over. And that's, you know, jumping. So I guess it really, everybody didn't know about it, but mm-hmm. it was there, you know, and it would be standing room only.
Okay.
Standing room packed to the top, you know, it was like the 20 grand, you know, you're in the 20 grand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was like a small 20 grand as far as,
okay.
you know, well kept secret, but it was booming.
Okay.
You know, you have anybody come through there. You know, Stevie Wonder came through there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just found it was shocking. Like, I was reading about it, and I'm like, wow. This is some place that I feel like is historical, but yet, I even lived in Midtown for a while. I never heard of the place, you know. So I was just really taken back by that.
Yeah. Marion had told me, some people don't even know what heard about the Raven, but that place, like I say, everybody don't know about it till you find out from somebody, you yeah. know, and it just didn't happen at the time, because on that same street, there was a bar there by the Detroit Emeralds called the Emeralds Lounge,
mm-hmm.
and there's a place called Mr. Kelly's on that same street down from the Raven, and these places used to carry, you know, big blues acts like Tyrone Davis and
mm-hmm.
Bobby Blue Bland and Little Milton, all that was on that same street. So, you know, everybody, you heard Mr. Kelly's before?
Yeah, I actually have heard of
him. Yeah, so see, that was it was on that same street.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, it was white owned too.
Okay.
Before Tommy got it.
The Raven was white owned?
Yes.
Okay. This will be our final question. What is it about Detroit that fuels magicians like yourself?
I think it's the love of music and the spirit, just the spirit itself. Like I said, it all goes back to Motown. When you start hearing a lot of the records on the radio, you want to be on the radio. You see acts on TV, you know. So Detroit, you know, that I think that would really field a lot of music, because I think Detroit got more entertainment than any city, you know. More talent than Atlanta, California. I think it's more talent here than any place in the world. Mm-hmm. Now, what field that? I think a lot had to do with the Motown and, you know, just kept rolling and people just wanted to be, you know, mm-hmm. involved with it because they was happy about the music and the music scene itself. Because, like I said, you could walk out here and be like you've probably seen a million times, there'd be a group singing on the corner. While four blocks down, there's another group singing on the corner, mm-hmm. you know. And then when I grew up, you'll walk down the street, you'll hear some young kids playing in the backyard, like myself. We put our stuff in the wagon, roll down four more blocks or wherever, mm-hmm. house. You know, so it's just, music was just everywhere all the time, you know.
So you could probably say it was something that it just has been born out of this.
Yeah, like, yep, you could get it right yeah. there. Yeah. You know, it was born, you know, out of, you know, that's why I have so many groups formed and so many bars. It was so many bars you can go play in, you know. You know, when I was little, I used to walk by bars and I'd hear a band playing through the door, and I'd stand by the door, you know, when I was still in elementary school, you hear the music playing. Oh, they're there jamming, you know. Mm-hmm. It was everywhere, you know what I'm saying? You know, and it's coming back now again, because, like, I play in different bars now, like the Raven, and there's so many bars bringing entertainment back, you know, locally. It seems like it's old days coming back, you know.
So you're kind of seeing the olden days return.
Basically. Yeah, because there's so many bars now got bands. Mm-hmm. You know, they started to shy away from the DJs and going to live music.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. You know, so now more people got bands, because there used to be like 1,000 bands out here, you know, just playing around.
Yeah.
You know, different bars, you know. So Detroit is there. It's on the bang. And like I said, you see a lot of concerts happening now. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the new arena, Caesars Arena, and all the other places. So.
Yeah, well, I'd like to thank you for doing this interview.
Oh, I appreciate it. And we'll give you Marion's number. You can ask him about the Raven. Because, he's got more history on the Raven than I thought he knew.